RTL Stories, the podcast with Lisa Berg from RTL Group.
One day in 2021, this colleague from London called me and asked me if I could see myself moving to Australia for a year in 3 months. And I asked her to for 24 hours to think about it. But then I was like, how can I say no? I mean, what an opportunity and what a great honor to be asked.
Hello and welcome to RTL Stories, the podcast. I'm Lisa Berg, based here at RTL in Luxembourg. And in this series, we explore the lives of extraordinary people who have made RTL their career home, investigating what they do and how they got there. Now, today's guest works behind one of the most recognizable brands in German television. Katja Beurle is an executive producer at UFA Serial Drama and leads Gute Zeiten, Schlechte Zeiten. Good times, bad times, or as many viewers in Germany know it as GZSZ, one of Germany's longest running and most successful daily drama series. Katja's career has been deeply connected to high-paced serial storytelling for over 20 years. And all of this started out as a casting assistant to a director at UFA, and she worked her way through other productions before eventually returning to what she calls the mothership. But alongside her production work, Katja also flipped over into management and helped to drive major change around representation and diversity inside the German television industry. She established UFA's Diversity Circle and UFA's Green Team, contributing to the company's commitment to greater diversity, both in front of and behind the camera, and a more ecologically sustainable way to produce and shoot audiovisual content. So today we're going to look inside the making of a daily serial production and also how you can move across careers within one mothership. So welcome to the podcast, Katja.
Thank you so much for having me and for the beautiful introduction. You're making me blush a little bit.
Well, it's all of your life. So we're going to start out because your whole career demonstrates a path forged by openness, curiosity, and the building of a global network. You have an insatiable want to learn. That's very, very clear. But let's go back to how it all began. And from a little chat we had earlier, a casting director walked into your parents' pub. And then your life has changed since then. Tell us about that first moment.
Well, I had recently graduated from university. I was a business major. And I figured that I'm going to spend my life in HR maybe. And I was still in that period where I worked and jobbed and traveled. And then this set casting director walked into that bar and after a while offered me an internship at the casting department of UFA Serial Drama, or back then Grandi UFA. And I was like, well, it's HR in a way. Why not give it a try? And yeah, that was in 2004. And I have not really left since then.
And it's a really incredible story because since then, you've spent more than 20 years working in daily television. It's a tough, fast-paced industry. The turnaround, it's high pressure. How do you manage to deliver constantly to that daily schedule?
I guess in working with fabulous people and a fabulous team, especially in that high-paced environment that you're talking about, it's making TV or movies is always teamwork, but in this environment, it's even more important to work with the best people and to work together. If you do daily drama, everybody just knows exactly what they do. It's a very professional environment, and that's the only way you can do that. So in the end, if you're executive producer or a director or like an assistant on set, we're all just a part of a big machine in a way, a great machine, but we all have our roles that are very clearly defined, and we do work hand in hand in the best of ways.
And for those outside of Germany, Good Times, Bad Times, it's been running for more than 30 years. It's extremely established. It's got an intergenerational audience. Tell us a bit about Good Times, Bad Times and what it means to the fabric, really, of pop culture in Germany.
Good Times, Bad Times is 34 years old now and has been a staple in TV. I think you can ask every German. They all know Good Times, Bad Times. I think my favorite example is of myself going to watch a movie last year. It was a huge movie based on a novel, and there were two young people who had just met and starting their relationship, and the guy in between the two of them, he became a bit emotional, and then the girl said, "Oh, you're getting too GZSZ for me now." This is what Good Times, Bad Times is. It's just, it's a part of pop culture. You just know if somebody is too Good Times, Bad Times, you just know what it means.
It's become a verb.
I think very many people in Germany, yes, it is. And I think very many people in Germany had a time where they watched it. Maybe as kids with their parents, maybe when they became parents. Everybody has a phase where they watched a soap, and very many people did that with Good Times, Bad Times, and that's still a case. I mean, it's a very old show now, but we're still catching millions of people every day. We're very successful in streaming. We're developing along with our audience, and I think that's our biggest strength.
And you've also said that the pace of narrative is an important issue when it comes to developing soap themes. And today's world is very stressful. It seems to be accelerating in all sorts of ways. And you've described viewers as needing that that time, that moment to catch their breath with something that they're deeply familiar with, something that they may have watched with grandparents on the sofa. But you also have to balance that moment to catch breath with the hook that's needed and perhaps an attention span that has lowered in recent years. How do you do that?
First of all, I think for a lot of people that watch daily dramas or Good Times, Bad Times, it's a part of their family. They see it as a real important part of their life. And they sometimes spend years, maybe even 10, 20, 30 years with that world, and they feel being part of it. That's what I think takes a lot of people back in this hard and in difficult times and stressful times, to just spend some time with their friends and families in front of the TV and join them. But I do believe that our pacing went down, to be honest. We are getting a bit slower in those times with our storytellings, because the world is getting overwhelming and difficult. And yes, like you said, our competition becomes more diverse. Like, we're competing with YouTube, for example, with TikTok and all of this. But I still think, I mean, our audience group is not 19-year-olds, and we will never reach them. We're strongest currently between the age of 30 and 49. We're actually very strong in that group, even stronger there than with the older people. Some consume content, you know, while in a bus or while on their way from A to B, and some just take it for a little short while to take a breath and to spend some time with people they know. And that's why you watch a daily drama.
And you also tackle some really socially relevant topics. You're on the leading edge of these conversations often. I know that you've covered organ donation, cancer awareness, addiction, mental health. How do you responsibly integrate these very important issues to entertain millions of people, but also for some people give them a template of how to approach these topics if they are dealing with that in their own lives and want to talk to their inner circle about such topics?
I think we're all very experienced with that, not only me, because that has always been done with the daily dramas. And I think for us, it's the most important thing to tell these stories, never with like a raised finger of how you have to do things, but with an approach where we offer opportunities and possibilities. Like, if you're in this situation, what you could do is, and we always have consultants that work with us on those topics, so we're not making any mistakes, but we always try to offer a way out. And how it's done is just by, you know, being empathetic and thinking about how would you want to see that, and staying with our characters and asking questions that are legit. So I think, yeah, the most important part is it's never you have to do it like that, but you could do it like that. And in the end, in a lot of cases, the answer is, you know, share, talk with your family, talk with your friends, don't stay alone with your issues, work with the people that surround you. That's what our characters do in those moments in the end, which is always what helps them. And I really think that that's good advice.
Well, I'm imagining it like this intergenerational family on the sofa, and then the extra member of the family is the television set, or however one is absorbing media this way, that it becomes almost part of the family to explore these different concepts, these different challenges that many of us face in our daily lives. You have this feeling of being at home because of that 34-year-old continuity, the same characters, the same families through good times, bad times, but the team that develops this storyline has changed. And so how do you incorporate new members of the team behind the scenes so that good times, bad times can have its continuity?
Well, to be honest, in at Good Times, Bad Times, in our story room, very many colleagues have been there for many years. It's not easy to become part of that team, because this team is very connected to the show and they're really passionate about what they do. So we always try to invite new writers, for example, new creatives to join us. But it's a hard task. It's hard for new people to get into that. But we're always trying. And then I think if you come to join us, and if you're really passionate about a daily drama and what we do and how we do it, you will always be able to find your way in and get accepted and stay and have fun. So I think that's the major thing.
To be locked in and to want to be there, of course. Now, soap operas have been also at the leading edge of analysing audience data and viewing patterns and habits. How much do you use audience data and the analytics, they're shaped in so many different ways nowadays, to help shape your creative decisions?
Oh, we use them every day. If you talk about like simple ratings, like data, like how many people are watching an episode per night, how many minutes of each episode do they stay? We look at that every day, really. It's our basis, because in what we do, we can learn from it and it can have an impact on what we do. It's different if you just have a one-off movie, then the data will tell you something for your next movie maybe. But for us, it's the basis of our work. But we also do like quality research. We also really have like panel discussions with audience members and ask them questions about how they like a storyline, how they like a character, and we work with that feedback as well.
So I'm going to bring all of this together. That's what you're doing now, but if we go back a little bit, you had been working as a producer for a long time and then you flipped. For some people, they might think it as a move sideways into management, a very unusual one, and that move within a very large company away from the creative team. And a lot of people must have thought, what are you doing? Because it seems so unusual. However, when I looked into it, there are so many overlaps. So as I see it in the world of soap operas, you're seeing the biggest social questions of our times. That's what you're tackling in the storylines. And secondly, as we've just mentioned, soap operas have always been on the leading edge of dealing with data, audience data. And so you combine both of these skills, and rather than looking outward to the audience, you looked inward to what was happening within a very large company. And you felt it was important to take ownership and responsibility to the people of the company and the environment. And you actually invented a completely new job title. So talk to us about this move and what instigated it within you.
I love to listen to you talking about that, Lisa, because all of a sudden my career makes sense. Because sometimes I wonder if it does. Because like you said, I was never that interested in like a classic walk up the career ladder. I was always intrigued by new adventures and new challenges. So most of the time I didn't stay longer on one project or one job than like 1.5 or 2 years. And then I asked for new for something else to do, or I invented something for myself. And I always had a lot of support from my my managers and HR, who always let me do that. And yes, at one point, and I think it was in 18 or 19, with the whole Me Too happening, with Fridays for Future happening, I started to think a lot about like my personal responsibility on the earth, but also the responsibility of a big company like ours that really has an impact, because we're content creators, we're being watched by millions of people, which makes us carry a lot of responsibility. And that was really the it was the first time that I really discussed that with myself, first of all. And then I got an offer to lead the internal education program at UFA, and I was like, yeah, I can do that, I like that, but I would like to work in creative responsibility as well. So I called myself creative responsibility manager. I do believe that I stole it from somebody at Random House. I think it's like it's the same company that might be okay.
It's actually a beautiful and title, then I creative start, responsibility
I think
manager.
So too. Thank you.
And it brings in everything that you are.
I think
it suits
too.
You very, very well. Yeah.
And then I started to work with the diversity topic and introduce diversity management to UFA and also sustainability in producing and shooting.
Yeah, because then UFA became the first German entertainment company to publicly commit to measurable, and here the data comes back in through your life story, measurable diversity goals. Why was it important to you to make the commitment publicly and to make it measurable?
As you said, I always liked data and I was used to working with it. But I also thought we're still a business, and if I want to pitch this, what I want to do to my CEO, I cannot tell him I want us to be better people, because we're still, you know, a company that needs to make money. So I approached the topic from an audience point of view. So I figured, how does the German society look like? They have changed and they're changing all the time. And we're not representing the German audience in our shows. So maybe we should work on that. But to work on that, we have to become aware first if our on-screen diversity matches the German diversity. Because if it doesn't, we will have a problem in the future. So that was my approach. And that was why we started to measure the on-screen diversity on the whole UFA portfolio.
Which is superb. But you didn't just stay with human diversity. You also moved into the green world and the ecology that is a surrounding, which it's not necessarily an obvious thing associated with filming. But in fact, you were also part of the group, the production representatives and broadcasters that negotiated the German green shooting standards with the German Film Fund. So tell us about that.
That was very exciting, because I think that was the first time in Germany that the whole industry worked together with one goal. I had never experienced that before. So in our group, there were broadcasters and lobby entities and production companies, and we discussed what the standards for ecological shooting, for green shooting could be, and we negotiated it with the film funding, or with like the German lawmakers, actually, to become part of the German film funding. So you needed, we wanted them to say, in order to get film funding from, you know, the official film funding, you need to produce green and measure your CO2 output. And that's what we did. And that was, I think, very important. And it was a great experience, just with so many people with one goal, and to all like be together on the same side, even with competitors.
Which is an extraordinary successful win, and all for the better for the world and for the people involved there as well. Now, moving on to another chapter of your life, in October 2021, during the COVID period, you moved to Australia for a stint at Neighbours. Now, Neighbours is with Fremantle. obviously moving to Australia is a large step. And when I was reading the notes as well, I had not realized that it was Australian producers who were brought to Germany at first to write soap operas for Unter Uns, for example. So in fact, it was flipping that. Mm-hmm. And they now asked a German to move over to Australia to help them with Neighbours at a very, very difficult time for Neighbours. So back in 2021, things were unfolding in the real world for Neighbours.
Yes, it was, like you said, an absolute full circle moment for me to go over there and to work with them. Fremantle had always done a great job to connect all the daily drama producers at Fremantle in form of a conference. We've done that like every 2 or 3 years. So we all knew each other. And then at one day in 2021, this colleague from London called me and asked me if I could see myself moving to Australia for a year in 3 months. And I asked her to like for 24 hours to think about it. But then I was like, how can I say no? I mean, what an opportunity and what a great honor to be asked. They were looking for an additional producer because they already knew that they might get cancelled from their British broadcaster in the next year. So the executive producer was supposed to look for new commissioners, new streaming services. So they needed an additional producer. And Australia always had two soaps, Neighbours and Home and Away. So there were not that many producers in the country. It's not that many people living in Australia, to be honest. So not that many people who had experience in soap, and they were looking for somebody who was experienced and could start, just, you know, arrive and start their job. So yeah, that's what I did in mid-lockdown.
It's an extraordinary
with hotel
story.
Quarantine
and the quarantine. Yeah, you spent 2 weeks of quarantine soaking up all of the scripts and watching to see the content. But as you've explained to me before as well, that when you are a soap producer, it's a little bit like a key in a lock. You know the process. Producing daily drama in Australia has exactly the same format and feeling and meetings almost as that in Germany. So part of it was the same. Part of it was very different, and you're taking on something that's deeply iconic at a very fragile moment. And so that must have been, and all of this, by the way, during COVID. So there's a lot coming at you there as well. It must have been, I mean, you must have seen some very, very deep conversations with people who have literally grown up with Neighbours. And also when people knew it was closing, how do you develop a script through that?
I think you can't. This was so special. You can't possibly develop a script to how to behave in a situation like that. The show was then cancelled while I was there, even quicker than we thought. It then later got picked up again, actually, by a streaming service. But at that point, it was cancelled. So it was a very emotional time. I think I was a good support for the producing team because I was not so emotionally involved as everybody else there. So sometimes if you needed, you know, a clear head or somebody in a conversation who was not, you know, knowing the other person for 20 years, having worked together for 20 years, I was always the new one and I could be clear and structuring. I had a very unique learning experience at Neighbours. It was emotional. It made me very proud that I had the chance to be part of this, even for like only one season. And it was great that I was able to do that in a company like this.
So your stint in Australia, you learned an awful lot, and then you returned to Germany. And so now, back in Germany, we are in the age of AI. AI is trying to change workflows, but it can't do everything yet. There are probably some examples where it can work quite well, perhaps, and bring costs down. Dubbing, for instance. How are you finding the changes that are unfolding around the creative processes?
First of all, it's very exciting for us. It's exciting to try new things, and especially the daily dramas have always very innovation-friendly and tech-friendly. Finding ways how technology can help us streamline our production process and make life easier for us and give us more time for being creative, that has always been our culture and our character producing soaps. With AI, we still have to learn a lot, and we're still in a testing phase. So we're doing a lot of tests in the post-production area, for example, and the editing process. We're doing tests with the props, with graphic design, now being able to do things that we haven't been able to do before. And I think the next step is to work with like green screens and generate backdrops with AI and send our characters to worlds where they couldn't have traveled to before because our budget won't allow. But we're still in a testing phase. And I think we will still need some time to test things.
That's one part of the nurturing of new technology, but the nurturing of talent, human talent, is another thing. You've spoken passionately about this as well, supporting young writers, directors and trainees, which is where your whole industry began as well. So how are you developing talent alongside this technology change?
I think always by giving them the chance to try to do their best with us. I think we have always been very inviting to new talent. If you become part of the team, like on a set level, for example, you have the chance to learn and step up. We have very many young people doing their apprenticeship with us, for example. So it's just a very natural part of our story, I think. And if you do a long-running show, you have the privilege to be able to offer that because it's not only, you know, 2 weeks or 3 months. With us, you can stay for years if you want to and learn and develop.
And then finally, really, a lot of people are watching this podcast series to see how you have moved through your career and all of the different options and choices you've made. Firstly, with that, are you happy on reflection of your own career and what would you like to do next? And secondly, you know, with everything that you have experienced, what advice would you give somebody who wants to walk into the television career, particularly when it comes to drama series today?
I am very happy with what I'm doing and with the choices I made. I think I never had a plan for my own career. I just always, you know, lived in the moment and then the current year and with my current challenge and task. And if I thought, okay, I can do that now, I know how it's done, I jumped to something different. So for that, being in a big company like we all are, you have very many opportunities. And I think it's very important, especially as a woman, to build a good network. So I can only recommend to work on your network, to just approach people, to look for people who are into the same things, to just give people like a message, write an email, give them a call, and ask for an exchange. And I never experienced anyone saying no, because everybody is always like, yeah, sure. I mean, I've invited people from other companies to like speak at UFA about their projects, because I'm so convinced that this is how we can all learn and develop. And I think it's just so much fun. So I can only tell everybody, get to know people, go to events that are taking place and just meet people, because it's a big privilege and opportunity to work in a big company like that.
It's a wonderful privilege. You laid it out so very, very well, and you've done all of the things you've just described, so you can feel very proud, and you are an icon, a beacon for many people as well. And just off the back of what Katya has said, now is a chance to get to know people through the network, through the internet. If you are part of RTL, let us know your thoughts on the RTL Group intranet. There's a comment section there. Of course, it's always better to meet people in real life or online for a phone call if you so wish. And it's quite easy to get in touch with one of us through social media channels. You just search for RTL Group on LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube, and nowadays most people are findable. Katya, thank you so much for your time and your reflections over what has been a fabulous career, and there are a couple of decades left to go, I'm sure.
Thank you very much for your time and for your questions, Lisa. That was a lot of fun.